Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano. Coming up on Inside Coverage, DK Metcalf gets a two-game suspension. Did the league get it right? Does anybody want to play the Jaguars? And was Liam Cohen right by suggesting that Sean Payton was shot at his small market team? Plus, should the league be able to drop a two-point conversion on the Seahawks 5 minutes later? That and any and everything you need to know about the playoff bracket with Charles Robinson and Frank Schwab. Inside Coverage next. It is the most wonderful time of the year. That is if you're one of the seven teams that have already clinched a playoff spot. And with that, we say happy holiday week to you and yours. This is Inside Coverage on Yahoo. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. Hope your shopping is done. I was running around Cleveland doing most of mine on Saturday. I kind of sort of have some of it done. By the way, Dad, read your text messages. The read receipt hasn't come up yet, or is it red receipt? I'm not sure. I sent you the message that said, don't open any of the Amazon is sent to the house with your name on them. Please don't open them. Just put them upstairs and I will deal with them later when I get there. Okay. Don't open any of the packages. Hi, I'm Andrew Siciliano. Hope you're doing well. This is the how and the why, any and everything you need to know about the National Football League. It's a show as I sit here in a hotel room with a puffy on. It's cold in Cleveland. It is also Charles Robinson's show. It is also Frank Schwab's show. They are senior NFL writers. It is not DK Metcalf's show because he has been suspended as we sit down to do this for full games. Friendly reminder, don't smack anybody in the stands. Before we get to this, see Rob, Frank, how are you? You guys good? Everything good? Shopping done? Weekend good?
Yeah, we'll say shopping's done. Sure. Yeah, that sounds good. That all the wrapping is done too, and all the I'm in great shape, doing well.
Were you guys snoopers when you were kids? Like Christmas gift snoopers? Did you snoop around?
Oh, yeah, of course, of course.
I wonder if everybody. Yeah, I did too. I've always wondered if everyone's a snooper. Yeah, kids, I guess.
Yeah, we figured out that in the basement, my dad had a workbench. You know, like behind the workbench. Or gifts were often in Dad's office. Yeah, we figured all that stuff out. Every now and then I would learn that sometimes they were in Mom and Dad's closet, like in their bedroom behind like all my mom's dresses and stuff. Yeah, of course. Generally speaking, we found everything. All the gifts.
Were there any really good hiding spaces? My mom eventually stopped putting them in the house and left them in the trunk of her car, which I did figure out, by the way.
I don't know that they ever did that. I also think that after a while, you stopped caring, but the curiosity wasn't the same as when you were 10 years old. Also, right. Dad, if you're listening, my brother and I were talking. Your other son, that is. I think we're moving towards a giftless 2026. Not to kill the economy here, but Dad, Mom, wrap your head around that. If you're cool with that, just comment on the YouTube stream. Cool? Okay, good. Gotcha. But let's do the DK Metcalf story. As we sit down to do this pod on Monday evening, DK Metcalf, the Steelers wide receiver, has been suspended for the final two games of the regular season. Now, the magic number for the Steelers over the Ravens, because they beat the Lions and the Ravens lost to the Patriots on Sunday night, is only one. So there's a chance here that if the Steelers beat the Browns, or if the Ravens lose to the Packers on Saturday, that they wouldn't need a Week 18 anyway. They wouldn't, and he could come back for the postseason. There's also a chance, and Steeler fans will say it's not a good chance, but it is a chance that DK Metcalf's season is over, that they don't make the playoffs without him, and that the Ravens somehow get in, and that we've seen the last of DK. There's a lot of debate about what he did. He didn't see it late in the second quarter. There was a Lions fan heckling DK Metcalf. He went over to the stands. He grabbed the guy by the shirt or his goofy blue wig, and then he seemed to strike him. Now, at first you thought it was a punch, and then it looked more like an open hand smack. And then you're like, did he really even hit him? It doesn't matter. The league says very clearly, you can't go into the stands and make physical contact with the fans. And we can all agree, you cannot do that. You saw the angle on CBS last night. It was the Nansen Romo and Tracy Wolfson crew. Guys, I don't know if you've seen this secondary angle. We're going to run it, then I want to get what you guys think of the interaction after this. Okay, so again, he pulls the shirt down. He pulls the shirt down, and then it's kind of a smack. Charles, what do you think? Two games for that.
Yeah, I mean, you can't. Any physical altercation with a fan in the stands, you better. I don't think there's a good reason. I don't think there's anything you can come up with that the league is going to accept, because they're going to say, look,
I agree.
It's the dividing line. You can't be touching fans. Fans can't be touching you. You know, if fans are coming after you, they're going to, there's probably a lifetime banishment, right? If you're a fan, let's say you jump down, you hit a player, right? Smack them, do whatever you want to do. You're not going to be back in the stadium ever again. The league's going to make sure of that, right?
And no one's going to have any mercy. No one's going to have any sympathy for it. Like, if that guy were to go over the wall and go at DK Metcalf, DK could knock him out. Nobody would care.
Yeah, no. Yeah, at that point, he's defending himself. And the interaction to me, the second I saw it, I thought, okay, that's at least one game. I thought for sure he'd get one game. I'm not surprised it's two. I think you have, if you're the NFL, you have to make sure that, and it's a very costly two games, both from a per game, you know, check standpoint for DK Metcalf. He's going to spend a whole heck of a lot of money losing two game checks. And then also for the Steelers, you're going to lose this guy the last two games of the season, which is going to jeopardize your ability to potentially make it to the playoffs. That's a massive, hit for everybody, a coaching staff, players, everybody involved, the entire franchise, the city. So it's not like, you know, there might be some people who say, it should be more than two games. Well, these two games are massive, massive games. The only thing I would say about this is the back and forth about what was said, what wasn't said, unless there's audio, right, of exactly what the interaction was in terms of what DK was responding to, we don't know. We're not going to know. It's between those two individuals, and they're each going to have their stories, and that's sort of what's come out today. The bottom line is, particularly in the city of Detroit, where the malice of the palace is unforgettable for the rest of my life, you do not want this happening, both from a Detroit fan perspective and also from a player perspective.
You know, Charles, you said, and I don't disagree with you with saying, like, this is a big two games. It obviously is. Also, though, if I'm the Steelers, I feel like it could have been a lot worse. If the NFL would have come out and said, you went into the stands and had an altercation with a fan, you're not playing in the playoffs either, I think we all would have been surprised. But at the same time, we would have been like, okay, like that makes sense, because he can't do that. And now it's very possible all DK Metcalf misses is two games that mean nothing to the Steelers season, because if the Ravens lose to the Packers, it's done. Right. The AFC North is a wrap. The Steelers Saturday win the division.
Saturday night. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead, Frank.
Saturday night is Ravens play at the Packers. We don't know if Lamar is going to play. We'll get into the Ravens in a little bit. But if the Ravens lose that game at Green Bay, the Steelers clinch the AFC North before they play on Sunday at Cleveland. So it is possible, at least, that Metcalf doesn't miss any games of any consequence. So if I'm the Steelers, I'm saying, yeah, there is a doomsday scenario where you lose to the Browns, which could happen on Sunday. Ravens beat the Packers. Now we're playing without DK Metcalf for the division title in week 18. But there's also another scenario where the Steelers don't miss him at all, and it could have been a lot worse. Again, like you talked about, Charles, like ever since the malice at the palace, that is the thing. Don't go into the stands. You do not get involved in fights with fans. You can't do it. And DK went out of his way to go and get in that fan's face and pull his shirt, all that kind of stuff. And so, yes, I think that two games is fine, but it could have been a lot worse, I think. If they would have said, we're not seeing it until the 2026 season, we would have been talking about it a lot. But I don't think any of us would have been like, that's the craziest suspension I've ever heard of, because it's just a line you don't cross.
You know, it's so interesting. So after the Browns and the Bills day, on my way home, I stopped at a restaurant, got some dinner, and I'm watching this game up on the big screen. Now, the big screen is close enough, but it's not right in my face. and I'm looking up, and there are people sitting at the counter next to me. All of us thought that he clocked him.
Me too. When you see it up close.
Yeah, not that angle. I'm talking the main CBS angle. You're like, oh, wow, he really got it.
Yeah, it looked like he punched him.
You know what? I don't think he did. I was talking to a lot of people last night who all said, and I heard from some this morning as well, man, he's just going to get fined. He didn't even hit him. I'm like, I think you guys are missing the point. He went over to the stands, grabbed the guy by the wig or by the shirt, whatever it is, pulled him close, and then swung. Whether it was a fist or an open hand, there is a distinction and there is a difference. And it certainly, it didn't look like he made contact or he hit the wig and not, which I mean, the fact that I'm saying that sounds ridiculous, but you grab the guy and you swung. Now, as for what was said, what you're referring to is Chad Johnson, Ocho Cinco, said that there were racial epithets thrown at him. There are other things thrown at him. And it's been reported through various insiders, and this is DK's camp, no doubt. There was a racial element to it, and the guy was screaming at him and yelling at him and speaking about his mother, and he had to go over there and do something. This guy, whose name I'll shall leave out of it, he has the last name of a former president, but there's a lot of them, said, I didn't say anything like that. He's already lawyered up. I said nothing like that whatsoever. Guys, there were witnesses, hundreds of them, in the stands. So we can find out what was said one way or the other, and I'm not defending this guy if he said horrible stuff. And I am not the one who should tell another man to always turn the other cheek. Have our limits. All of us do. There are lines that shall not be crossed, and all of us have that line where we don't care anymore. We're going to act. DK, you can't grab a guy out of the stands and swing. You just can't do that. I was talking to Max Stark today, this video, and you know, this is off the air, but I'll share. This is nothing, you know, talking out of school. The defense is on the field. DK is on the sideline. Like, come on. You can't lose focus. What are you doing,
man? I thought that too, actually. Yeah,
you're not George Pickens.
Right in the middle of a game. Like, what are we doing?
You're not George Pickens. Like what? He's never done anything like this, but you got rid of a hot-headed receiver. DK could be a bit of a hothead. I mean, there are teams in the NFC West that think he's dirty as, like, on the field, taking some cheap shots, but you can't go over and do that. And this absolutely unequivocally had to be a suspension. It had to be a suspension. And I think the league got it right. Now, let's play a hypothetical. This did not happen, but I'll ask both of you. Let's say DK actually made contact, whether it's with an open hand or a fist. And let's say this is hypothetical, that you saw the guy's head jerk back. You saw there was contact. Should the Detroit police go into the locker room and arrest him at halftime? Huh. I mean, we could have been in that scenario. Can you imagine if he actually made contact and that guy goes to the cops right there and goes, hey, I want to press charges. I want to press charges. Detroit Metro is knocking on the door of the locker room at halftime saying, number four, come with us. Can you imagine what that situation would be like, C-Rob?
Yeah, I mean, I have to believe that even if it did occur where you're sitting there and you see it happen and he goes to the police, that's something that they would sort out after the game. It was something they would sort out late. I it's just hard for me to believe. And I'm trying to think as you were saying this, I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, has that ever happened in professional sports? Where
I don't remember.
I mean, even in the Malice of the Palace, no one was arrested that night. None of the players were arrested that night. So, like, it wasn't, and there was video evidence of people fighting in the stands.
Not saying it should happen. Like, could you have imagined that? Or I kept getting my phone was blowing up last night. He needs to be kicked out of the game right then and there. Well, there's no flag. This isn't
that's the helmet, right?
There was no way
he knocked a guy out, and they're like, eject him. There was no flag,
guys. Like,
from a legal perspective,
and if officials didn't see that, they're worried about holding on the field. You know, they're not
really
worried about what's
going
on.
We can't turn this into, you know, the people who have these opinions like the officials should have ejected. The officials do not. They're not there to deal with
they
the
didn't
fans.
See
okay,
it.
That's not their job. No. Mm-hmm. Okay,
that's not their job. So no, it's now, beyond the scope. Yeah,
yeah. What are you going to do? You're going to put this on the sky judge now and say, okay, you're also court is in session every game. If you see anything happening between players and fans, you make the call and eject a player for something that happens on the sideline. I mean, it's just the one thing I will say about this. I wonder if this raises the specter with teams where you're like, maybe we just need to assign somebody on our staff to make sure that they're standing between our sideline and the fans and just paying attention, making sure, hey, you know, exactly. Yeah. Somebody in security, whoever else has access on the field, just designate someone to be your get back coach. You know, players start approaching fans, get back. You know, I doubt that happens because this seems like such a one-off. It's not like this is something that occurs with any kind of a regularity, but I'm sure teams are discussing this right now internally about, hey, what if this ever happens with us? Do we have any scenario to make sure that, you know, we don't have players who are drawn into this by fans? There's no doubt in my mind there's a discussion in other buildings about something like this.
Yeah, real quick, I've watched every Malice in the Palace documentary there could be because it's just such a crazy night in our lives as sports fans. And I think my favorite part of it, talking about not that guys weren't even arrested then, is Steven Jackson tells a story that in the locker room, after all of this has happened, prior test turns to Steven Jackson and says, you think we're going to get in trouble for this?
Trouble for this?
Yeah. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Like, just one of the great lines of all time.
And Steven Jackson's reaction to it, which was profane, is hilarious.
Yeah.
Reaction so to Ron so, asking him that is like
it's so good. It's amazing. But to add his point, like I do think if this would have turned out differently and he would have cold cocked the guy, at that point, yes, I do think he's done for the playoffs or maybe into the 2026 season. And
he would not. He'd be gone.
And the case I thought about was Myles Garrett with the helmet swinging with Mason Rudolph. It is different, but
that was an indefinite
Myles Garrett
suspension.
Didn't hit Mason Rudolph. Right. If Myles Garrett didn't hit Mason Rudolph with the helmet, it would have just been like, you'll get a game, whatever. But the optics of hitting him were like, you're indefinite suspension. I think it was 8 games, 6 games, whatever it ended up being. Andrew, you probably know better than me. That would have happened here. You could say like, well, he shouldn't get penalized because he missed, but he did. And if he would have hit him, it would have been a lot worse for DK. All in all, as I said, I don't think this is the worst outcome for DK Metcalf to get 2 games. It could have been worse.
We all agree real quick, not to linger too much, that Amon-Ra St. Brown clearly pushed off. That is clearly OPI.
Yeah.
Even though Carl Cheffers was clumsy in his explanation at the end of the game, it was OPI, right?
Took them so long to discuss? They were discussing that for like 3 minutes. And it was like, what are we discussing?
Whether or not they replayed it down. Whether or not them up and tell. Go ahead.
I think what happened was that you had everyone's like, why did all these officials come in? I think it was because there were so many things that had happened that they had to make a judgment call on. It was like, okay, was progress stopped? But I think you had to explain every single thing that had happened in sequential order and make sure they're all on the same page with every single thing that happened in sequential order. Once that was all lined up, I think that's why it took them so long to discuss it, because they're like, let's get it all right and then go out there and serve it all up at once.
Now, the Isaac Tesla OPI,
yes, that was the one I think that was terrible.
Quibble with, but
terrible call. Terrible call.
Young receivers, you get taught, and he's a rookie, make yourself available to the quarterback. Okay, at least look back to the quarterback. Try to turn back to the quarterback. Feign that you're actually looking for the football or trying to make yourself available to your back. And if you don't do that, you're not going to get a call. Also, I've been told the Steelers clearly had called that out to the officials earlier, specifically about Tesla. Hey, they're running this pick play. He's guilty. Keep an eye on it. And they listened to him on that final drive. Let's tap the base here on the Ravens as well. Tied to this, congratulations to the Patriots. They are back to the postseason for the first time since that Mac Jones season. They're 7-0 on the road. The Patriots have won 11 of 12, and they rally from down 11 points on the road with 12 minutes to go to stun the Ravens. Round of applause for the Patriots their season. And the Mike Vrabel one-year turnaround has been fantastic. And I can't wait to see what they do in the postseason. They're a flawed team, but they're a winning team, and they play clean and sound football. And Kalyvon Chaisson, one of those bargain basement free agent pickups, a former first-round pick, well-traveled, forces the fumble at the end, and they lose. The other side of this, however, is that John Harbaugh, as I told you last Thursday, might be coaching his final home game. They end now with two on the road, and there's still a path to the postseason, but the Steelers would have to lose both, and Week 18 is against the Ravens here. But they blew that lead. They are 7-8, 6-9 at home. Lamar Jackson is banged up. He's been banged up all year. He missed three games. He's missed practice. I mean, we've lost how many times? We've lost count of how many times he has missed practice. He's been knocked out of three different games. I'm not blaming him for being hurt, but something seems off here, guys. And in year 18, John Harbaugh is on the podium today getting asked seven different questions, Frank, about why Keaton Mitchell started the final drive and not Derrick Henry, about why Rashad Bateman can't get going, about why you can't protect a lead. He was asked multiple questions about your job security. How often do you speak to Steve Bisciotti? I thought Frankie had a great line. Harbaugh, 63 years old, 18 years in the job, said, "I try to do the job, not keep the job." Thought that was good perspective here, but you do have to ask, is it time?
And I think at this point it might be. And remember all those Mike Tomlin conversations we were having 2-3 weeks ago? What just replaced the name John Harbaugh. Like, it's the exact same thing where you say John Harbaugh has put together a Hall of Fame resume. There's no questioning what John Harbaugh has done for the Ravens. He's been fantastic. He was, I think, often overshadowed because he was in the same conference as Bill Belichick. But he was one of the best coaches in the NFL and has been for almost two decades now. But you get to a point where you're just like, maybe the message is stale. Maybe we need a change. I don't think there's any question, although Lions are in the conversation, that the Ravens are the most disappointing team in the NFL this year. They've been really bad. The Lions are just losing to good teams and it can't get any consistency going. The Ravens have simply been bad. And that's not just with Lamar Jackson out. Like, even when Lamar Jackson's been in the lineup, admitting that he has been banged up and he hasn't been 100%, they haven't even been good when Lamar's in there. And it just, everything has gone wrong for the Ravens. And you touched on a few of those things that John was asked about today. Even like the defense has been really, really bad this year and hasn't gotten going. The improvements that they made last year that made them one of the best teams in the NFL, that's not happening anymore. And when you look at John Harbaugh's resume, great, of course, they rarely have had any losing seasons under him, kind of like Tomlin. But the playoff success hasn't been there. The same thing with Tomlin, when we're talking about, you haven't won this many playoff games since this year, blah, blah, blah. The same thing applies to John Harbaugh. Go look. I mean, we're talking about Lamar Jackson, one of the great quarterbacks of all time, really. And I'll say that. I'll continue to say that. Has not made a Super Bowl. Well, doesn't John Harbaugh have to answer for that, too? They've had so many playoff disappointments, and it always goes on Lamar's shoulders. Everybody says, oh, Lamar didn't come up in the big spot, blah, blah, blah. Well, neither has John Harbaugh. Since that Super Bowl so many years ago at Flacco, the playoff success has really been lacking, even though the regular season success has been there. And I think the Ravens are going to miss the playoffs. I don't think they're going to have some miracle and beat the Steelers for the division. And at that point, I do think the Ravens and John Harbaugh part ways. Just because, not because John Harbaugh is not a good coach anymore, but just because there's something amiss here. And I don't think the Ravens can waste any more time of Lamar Jackson's prime, which I don't think is going to last another 10 years. Remember, Cam Newton was kind of done at age 30. We need to treat Lamar differently, how long he has as a prime. I don't think he's going to be a prime quarterback at age 37, right? Mm. You can't keep wasting Lamar Jackson's prime saying, well, maybe this is the year John Harbaugh gets it back together. I think the Ravens have to act and act right now.
First off, the Cam Newton comparison, I mean, Lamar, definitely the injuries have piled up this year and they've been an issue. Cam Newton probably was the most hit quarterback in terms of just taking absolute punishment top to bottom. So I think it'll be a little bit deeper than Cam in terms of how long he can carry his prime. But I think it's a good point. You've wasted a lot of his prime. And if you're Steve Bisciotti, the owner now, I think if they don't make the playoffs, I think you have to sit there and say, okay, now let me look at this. I've had this head coach. I've had this quarterback who's won a couple of MVPs the last few years, right? I went out and I got the piece in Derrick Henry that we needed. I've spent on the offensive line. We've had a, you know, high-end, elite-level tight end. We've had a defense that we've spent on. Roquan Smith is out there. Kyle Hamilton's out there the last couple of seasons. You know, the money has been invested. The parts have been added to try and get them over the top. And you never sniffed a Super Bowl in that span. I think if you're Steve Bisciotti and you see this window close, which I think if they miss the playoffs, to me, that's it. The window's closed. You have closed the window officially, at least this window. You have to say to yourself, what else could I have done? I did everything I could do in terms of adding pieces and giving him everything. And last year should have been the year, or the year before that should have been the year. And ultimately, they weren't able to get there for whatever the circumstances. A Zay Flowers fumble, you can blame it on whatever you want over the last couple of seasons. It just didn't happen. And now Lamar is getting more beat up. I'm looking afield and I'm seeing other teams making coaching changes. And what? They're sparking their franchise, right? They're seeing you know, results from change. I just think the window closing to me is the biggest reason why Steve Bisciotti now would stare at this and go, okay, we didn't even make the playoffs here. We have not been able to reach a Super Bowl with, I think, arguably the very best quarterback in the league. If you average out the years that he's played in Lamar Jackson, something's got to change now at this point. And we've receded the point of not even getting the postseason. It's change for the sake of trying to jumpstart things.
Yeah. And like I've said a thousand times, and it was Brian Billick who told me this years ago, who preceded John Harbaugh in Baltimore, and he had a decade. He said, after a while, you just feel like the message isn't there anymore, and it is time for everybody to move on. I love John Harbaugh. I truly do. I think he's a great coach. I wonder in this cycle if they were to part ways, and I think it would be an amicable parting of the ways. Would somebody else jump on him? Does he want to do TV? He's 3. Does he need a year off? His record there is 179-112. So regular season winning percentage of 615, 12 trips to the playoffs, a winning record in the playoffs, 13-11. Most people can't say that. And since they drafted Lamar Jackson in 2018, and that year they split, Flacco started 9 games and Lamar started 7. Since they drafted him, double-digit win seasons in 6 of 7 years. So they've won over and over and over again, but they have not yet been able to get over the hump. All right, that's the AFC North. I promise there is other football other than the AFC North as we roll on here on Inside Coverage on a Monday. How about those Jaguars? They've been jump-started with a brand new head coach. Did Liam Cohen make something up? Or was Sean Payton truly trying to take a dig at Jacksonville? That's next. Don't go anywhere. Hey, it's Inside Coverage on Yahoo. Happy holidays to you and yours. Monday of Christmas week. Andrew Siciliano, Charles Robinson, and Frank Schwab. As we sit here on Monday evening, and again, this is before the Monday night game, the Colts and the Niners are to lose, and 3 more teams punch their ticket on Monday night. But as we sit here right now, there are 2 spots left in the NFC, the NFC South winner and 1 wild card, and 5 spots left in the AFC. The South winner, the North winner, we hit that already, Steelers and Ravens, and then 3 spots in the wild card. The Bills, the Chargers, and the Jaguars all get in if the Colts lose on Monday. And I talk about the Jaguars. They went to Denver and laid a whooping, just a whooping on the Broncos. Final score 34-20. And listen, nobody wants to go to Denver to face the defense. Broncos losing for the first time in September is not the end of the world, okay? But Jacksonville is quickly taking on that aura, that air of nobody wants to play the Jaguars because they are cooking. Jacksonville is the smallest NFL market in America and Green Bay. A lot of people would argue, myself included, that Jacksonville doesn't have the infrastructure to actually have an NFL team. Jacksonville, I love you. You're good people. But numbers are numbers. You do a great job of supporting your team. There's a reason Shad Khan plays multiple in London and that he toyed with the idea of moving that team to London. You could go all the way back to the late Art Modell that, as legend has it, blocked the city of Baltimore from getting an expansion team. Thus, the team went to Jacksonville and Wayne Weaver, disappointed, probably should not have gone there. But that is neither. In the present, Sean Payton said something last week that got under the skin of Liam Cohen. Talked about the market size, talked about the small town mentality and the lack of respect maybe that came with that for the Jaguars, a team he was about to face and a very good team. And Liam Cohen used that to his advantage. We're going to play both sound bites back to back and then analyze. Go ahead.
As you look at him and you watch the tape, it you know, it's a smaller market, but you see a real good team.
You know, a small market team like us can come into a place like Mile High and get it done.
I don't think that's that big of a deal. We spent 5 minutes on Thursday's show saying that this is a great game and it's a shame that the overwhelming majority of America is not going to see it. CBS had the doubleheader. They had the Lions and the Steelers to the majority of America. And Fox had that game, even though it's two AFC teams. Those rules don't apply anymore, right? And most of America wasn't going to be able to see that game. See, Rob, you speak. Was he taking a shot?
Listen, I okay, let me be careful about how I say this. Sean rarely says anything where he doesn't know what he's saying, right?
Correct. Like
he calculates everything that comes out of his mouth. He understands it. He knows when to deliver a message. He knows who he's talking to and what point he's trying to get across. My question is, why even mention the market size at all? Like it's truly irrelevant. In the big scope of things, when you're talking about competitive teams, you're talking about a team you're about to play, the market that they're coming from is fairly irrelevant in regards to the team you're actually putting on the field, unless you connect it and say, hey, it's a smaller market team. It's harder to draw free agents at times in smaller markets. Sometimes there are players who don't want to go those places. Like, if you want to make that connection.
I thought it was more... He was saying, like, this Jaguars team is really good, but nobody's paying attention because they're in a small market.
Exactly.
That's what I thought he was trying to say, but I don't. Like I said, Sean, you said it well. Sean always knows what he's saying, doesn't he?
Yeah. I'm really torn because Charles and Sean knows exactly what he's doing. Like, for example, the Sean shot at Nathaniel Hackett a couple of years ago, there's no amount of money that would convince me that wasn't all planned. It was absolutely all planned. It was, again, my opinion. I've never asked him point blank and that I would get a straight answer during daylight hours, but maybe one day I would ask him. I think it was all planned. I think it was a motivation for his locker room. Like, hey, I'm coming in here. Last year, you were coached poorly. You guys were put in a bad situation. It's all that guy's fault. I'm here to fix things, and I want you guys to know that you're still a good team. Look in the mirror, hold yourself high. We're going to fix this stuff. It was that guy's fault. Okay? I think that's what he was doing. I think it was all planned. But again, that's just me, and I agree with you, Charles. I think everything is thought out. Like Joe Burrow, nothing he says thought out. But this also does, hey, you guys, most of America probably doesn't know much about the Jaguars. They're a small market. They're not on TV. It's a damn good team. But he didn't say it that way. But if on paper, it reads that way.
Let me just make this point. Maybe we're focusing on the wrong coach here. Maybe the coach we should be focusing on is Liam Cohen because, and I mean this in a positive sense, screw it. Use it. You're Liam Cohen. You absolutely use it. You use anything you can. Look, the Patriots for years took every single thing. It didn't matter what it was. They blew it out of proportion to motivate themselves, made it into bulletin board material. I like it. And by the way, I'm sitting here and I'm staring at Liam Cohen. I'm saying, okay, this guy's got Trevor Lawrence playing like the generational player we were told Trevor Lawrence was going to be. He's doing it without Travis Hunter Jr. He's doing it with Brian Thomas Jr. being not what he was, at least to the Jaguars last year, right? I'm very, very impressed. And it also makes me realize that after Nick Sirianni did it and Dan Campbell did it in their, first press conference, win the first press conference with the media, and they both got made fun of because how their first press conferences went.
Did he lose it?
Now they both lost it. If anybody remembers, like we killed Sirianni, we killed Dan Campbell.
Yeah.
And then we also killed Liam Cohen because he did the Duval. And everybody said, man, that's corny. And that guy seems like a weirdo. And that got played over and over and over again. And you know what? Maybe we should just relax on the first snap judgment of how a guy seems.
Well,
because Liam Cohen's fed it to
everyone. First impressions matter. Dates or job interviews, right? The first time you sit down across the table from somebody, date or job interview, you know pretty quickly whether or not this is going to be somebody you like and what you think, right? When you turn on a song on the radio or your playlist, whatever streaming service you're listening to, you know in two notes whether or not you want to keep listening to this song. Same thing on a press conference. But, yeah.
I don't know. All I know is we made fun of him. James Gladstone got hired, and we're like, oh my God, it's like a kid. Listen to the way he talks. He's talking in this grandiose fashion. Yeah. Like we had all these issues, and then I'm looking at Jacoby Myers, and I'm like, that was by far the deadline pickup. Right? I'm like, what this guy is doing for their team right now is amazing, and the fact that they went and extended him immediately because they saw this is what he brings us the middle of the field. We lack the middle of the field. This guy's going the middle of the field to get the football. He's not afraid of contact. Added a huge component to that offense. I don't know, man. I the Jaguars, they've won me over. There's no doubt about that. And I come from the era of. In 2004, I worked in Orlando. I remember going to Jacksonville when Wayne Weaver owned the team, and they were covering seats with tarps to make it look like it was less empty seats in the stadium. Like that was a real thing. This to me, I love what they're doing. I love the embrace of the surrounding area of it, and I'm very happy for Jaguars fans. And I can tell you that this Liam Cohen, the impressiveness with which he's turned that offense around and what he's doing with Trevor Lawrence. I did not believe in that 2 months ago. I was like, nope, Trevor Lawrence is going to be a fringe top 20 quarterback his entire career. That's just who he is. I think I was wrong.
Yeah, Frank, they were 5-4 and they had basically lost to the Raiders. Right?
Yeah,
they're 5-5.
A complete turnaround. And the game that I wish I would paid more of attention to, and at the time I was just kind of like, that's fine, whatever. They beat the Chargers 35-6 a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And all of us kind of just said, oh, okay, good win, whatever. No, that was the sign that the Jaguars were getting really good in a hurry. And they haven't lost since. They've won 6 in a row. And some good wins in there too, especially against the Broncos, who I think Broncos are still a very, very good football team. They just got beat by a really hot Jaguars team. The Liam Cohen thing is interesting because I just think this is who he is. And I think back the first half of the season before they played the 49ers, if you remember, he made a big to-do out of nowhere about Robert Saleh stealing our signs and and that. And it was just out of the blue. And you're like, what are we talking about? And then you had like the dust up with him after the game.
Yep.
And now this comes out of the blue where I don't think there's another coach in the NFL who would be listening to Sean Payton say flippantly like, yeah, they're from a smaller market, but whatever. And, like Liam Cohen's like, guys, we got to go get them. Like that's just his thing. And okay, cool, great. I think that's a sign of a good coach, honestly, where you know your team and, hey, I'm going to motivate these guys this way. Whatever. It is kind of weird and I wouldn't do it necessarily, but Liam Cohen has figured out like, hey, I'm going to get all these perceived slights. We're going to use them to our advantage. It's us against the world and it's working for him. I think right now, I would vote Kyle Shanahan coach of the year if I had a vote. I don't, Charles, but I think Liam Cohen's a fine vote too. Why not? He has done so much this year. He has improved, and just the difference in Trevor Lawrence has been astounding the last 4 weeks. Remember, early in the season, they were like gesturing towards each other with Liam Cohen's ripping him from not throwing the ball accurately enough, and Trevor Lawrence was throwing his hands up. Now, Trevor Lawrence played the best football of his career by far. And last week, I thought, okay, he had 6 touchdowns, but that's against the Jets. Who cares? He did it against that Broncos defense. I'm like, whoa, okay. Trevor Lawrence all of a sudden. I mean, I even saw something today, like, is he in the MVP conversation? The answer is no, but to be in that conversation, to even get that kind of buzz, we weren't talking about that a month ago. That's Liam Cohen's coaching. I think he's done a tremendous job in respect to the Jaguars. I did not expect him to go into Denver and win like they did.
So let's run down their schedule. And Liam Cohen is in the coach of the year conversation, 100%. So let's go through their quality wins. Week 1, Is Carolina the team that right now leads the NFC South? Were they that team week one? I don't know. But on paper, that's a quality win now. When they lose to the Bengals, then they beat the Texans playoff team, Niners playoff team, Kansas City in week five in primetime. I don't care how they finish. That's an impressive victory in the moment, week number five. They lose to the Hawks and the Rams. They go to the bye and then come back and almost lose to the Raiders. Then they lose to the Texans. But since then, Chargers, check. Cardinals, eh. Titans, eh. But Colts and Broncos in two of the last three, they have quality wins. Nobody is looking at their schedule and says, eh, you haven't really beaten anybody. No, Jacksonville has beaten people. And you're going to have to go to Jacksonville to beat them in the postseason.
And they got a shot at the one seed. They got a shot at the one seed now. It's not out of the question.
No. They actually do. And if the playoffs were to start today, they don't. They get Josh Allen and company at home. But there are still four teams that can get to the NFC. And somehow six teams, as we sit here right now, that have a shot at number one. Obviously, six unreasonable, but six technically, including the Jaguars, can get there.
And no, now that, guys, what do? We spend all season and we're like, we know it. You know, mid-December to late December, we're going to see a team that is catching a heater where we're like, oh, wait a minute. The momentum now feels different for this team. And that's who I'm worried about once they go in the playoffs. If I have to face that team right now, Jacksonville feels like that team. It feels I know the win streak's obviously been longer than just December, but this Denver win to me is the one where everybody's antenna in the AFC should go up and go, OK, if they can do that now at a point when Denver is fighting for that number one seed and they do it in Denver, I think Jacksonville might be that team that's putting it together at the perfect time right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought that team was Houston. I thought Houston's coming alive and all this and that. I'll be honest. I thought the Jaguars were going to fall by the wayside at some point and the Texans were going to win that division. No.
Raiders ain't going anywhere, guys. Texans Sunday. I was rooting for the Raiders.
Raiders really against the AFC South. They just need to play AFC South teams. They play a lot better.
If the Raiders off somehow, the Browns would have jumped up. Browns, as it stood yesterday, moved up from four into the three spot for the draft position. Giants and Raiders do play in week 17. Somebody, you have to think, wins that game, at which point the Browns then jump up to two in draft positioning heading into week 18, just like it was. Let's go back to Thursday night, if we could, because this week started with one of the crazier games and one of the best games, not only of this season, but in the last decade, honestly, that we've seen played. And it ended with the Seahawks beating the Rams in overtime in Seattle in another Thursday night classic, with sending Eric Saubert for a two-point conversion, a late release there on a two-point conversion. The tight end sat down as he got to the goal line, and Darnold hit him. But the story of this game came from a two-point conversion earlier in which Sam Darnold threw an incompletion. Jared balled out of the line of scrimmage, and the play was over. Zach Charbonnet, however, picked up that football and handed it back to the official. He picked it up in the end zone. That is where the ball ended up after Jared Verse knocked it down at the line of scrimmage. The Seahawks didn't complain. Mike McDonald didn't ask for a replay. He pointed up to the Jumbotron. Nobody made a mess. Nobody cared. It was a failed two-point conversion. And 1 minute and 50 seconds, 5-0 later, they were told, both sidelines, that the play is now being reviewed. It was determined that the ball that Darnold threw was a lateral and that Jared Verse knocking it down was actually forcing a lateral. It wasn't a forced fumble. He just knocked it down. It was a live ball. And that even though there was a whistle and even though nobody thought Eric Saubert was doing anything other than politely handing the ball back to the official, he didn't hand it up. He didn't hold it up rather and go, look, I scored. He handed it back to the official. The league decided from New York, here's 2 points for you, Seahawks. And we were tied. And we eventually went to overtime. Now, a lot of people will say, hey, if they get the call right, what does it matter? And I think we all agree, they get it right, it doesn't matter. That said, I'm not sure they got it right, because I don't think the video conclusively shows that it is a lateral, and it wasn't ruled a lateral on the field. That's my opinion.
Okay.
If they came back and said, guys, it's inconclusive, would you have argued with that? You think it's conclusive? Frank, I see you shaking your head. Do you think it was conclusive that it was a lateral?
I honestly do. I do think it was a lateral.
Really?
And I think that I do. And look, I get why Sean McVay's mad, right? Because when calls go against you like that, you're like, I've never seen that happen before, where they come back a minute, 50 seconds later and rule. But Terry McCauley, I'll give a lot of credit to, look, I like the officiating experts on broadcast. Terry McCauley on the Amazon Prime Video broadcast called it out right away. He's like, guys, I think there's a lateral, and I think there's a live ball. Zach Charbonnet picking up the ball, kind of just casually, like, oh, here's the ball. He picks it up in the end zone. This reminded me so much of the Tuck rule, in that everybody looks at the play and says, that doesn't look right. That doesn't look like with Brady. That doesn't look like a fumble. But you get to the rule book and you're like, actually, they got it right. This, I think it was officiated perfectly, actually.
See, like,
yes, it took a while. It took a while. I do think it was a lad. I think everything about it is inarguable from my aspect anyway. I could understand why some people wouldn't think it's lateral. From my aspect anyway, I think it was a lateral. I think there was a clear recovery, as weird as it was. I think they officiated it right. If you want to argue about the rules, we could argue about the rules, just like the Tuck rule. Remember, like, we're like, that shouldn't be a rule in the rule book, and it was changed. Maybe that happens this offseason. But I really do think the way it was officiated, they got it right. It just took a while. It was a little awkward, like the Lions game too. But I think they got this one right. And I just... bananas. I've never seen anything like it. That's the only 2-point conversion I can remember like it, but I do think they got it right.
Charles, do you think it was a lateral?
I did. I'm not going to lie.
Really?
I did too. I thought it was a lateral.
Charles wanted to disagree with me.
I hate agreeing with Frank. I hate the rule though. I just don't like the rule. Like
it's difference between a lateral and a fumble.
Yeah. Yes. In I don't, sense. I think it, there is, but I mean, it's, I thought Matt Stafford made a good point where he's like, okay, well, if this is how it is, we can, it's the holy roller, right? We just, all we got to do is make sure if you like you roll the ball in the end zone, figure out a way to get it. Like just not, it's not clean. It's not, it just feels like a weird rule that I obviously didn't know existed. And then once they resolved it,
right. I didn't know a Tuck rule existed. Exactly. Right.
Another thing too, with the whistle, I almost feel like there needs to be some kind of governance from the NFL that once the whistle occurs, if you haven't gotten it sorted out by the whistle, once the whistle happens, everything else is benign. Doesn't matter. Anything else that happened after the whistle, that no longer, it's, we screwed it up. We whistled it. It's on us. But once the whistle occurs, nothing else can be transacted.
But it used to be that way. It used to be that way. Right.
Right.
And then they said, well, if there's a clear recovery, because it used to be, oh, well, there's no fumble recovery because we blew it dead. And you're like, but wait a minute. You blew it dead when you shouldn't have blown it dead. It was clearly a fumble. I fell on it. It should be my football. Okay. Well, now there's a clear recovery. If we blew it dead and you guys kept playing, it's cool. We'll let you have the football. That's way here.
Now, I think that just shifts. To me, that shift. I mean, I guess whatever. The burden's on the player, right? Like, I'm sure players are told, hey, pick up the ball. Like, don't just, if it hits and you think there's any question,
I saw that.
Pick
did
up
you
the
guys
ball.
Notice? I saw that a lot on Sunday. I saw it a lot where guys, the ball, like, you know, we see plays like that 50 times a game, not that many, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, and you're like,
I saw guys going to pick up the ball.
Guys
going to pick up the ball on Sunday more. Maybe I was just noticing it more, but it seemed like more players were like,
sure,
I'm picking up this ball just in case. Why not? And that's what you should do.
But we don't had it in that's the Browns coaching game. On the play, Quinshon got hurt. Matt Milano kept running the other way, and there was no whistle. And look, our concern was Quinshon's leg went in a direction that it should never go. But Matt Milano picked up the ball, and there was no whistle. And there was an official actually jogging with him 40 yards downfield into the end zone. I'm like, is this a touchdown or not? And then it came to the point where, like, there's no signal. I don't care what's wrong with Quinshon. But, yeah, look, guys are coached. Guys are coached. Always pick up that football.
Yep.
I guess I would feel differently. Like Herb Street said in the moment, oh, heads up, Zach Charbonnet. Yes, absolutely. But nobody, Zach Charbonnet included, thought he was picking up 2 points.
No, nope, not
nobody.
But he just,
nobody.
But, hey, at some point, probably some Mike McDonald might have said in a meeting during July, hey, you know what? There's a loose
I'm
ball
sure
picking
he
up.
Did.
Just because, you know, because that's good coaching. Yes. And I'm not that Sean McVay isn't a good coach, but you know what I mean? Like that's something, but now you're going to see it a lot. You're going to see guys I'm just picking up this ball just in case a minute 50 from now they say the play is under review. That's the kind of thing you'll have. But I do agree with you guys. I think the rule, like, they need to go and look at the rule now, because whether it's the whistle, like you said, the whistle happens and sorry, we blew the whistle, nothing can happen after that or whatever, because it looked weird. It still looks weird, but I just think the way the rule's written, I think that was a 2-point conversion.
Yeah, they come back from commercial 5 minutes later. By the way, the Seahawks now have 2 more points than they did when last crazy. Week we're here. Yeah,
and just a bananas game. Like I don't even want. I don't even want the 2-point conversion to overshadow how bananas that game was. The Seahawks were, as Amazon Prime said, 0-172 when trailing by 15 or more points in the fourth quarter. They came back. It was like instantly. It went from they're down 16 to tie game. It seemed like in a blink of an eye. And for Sam Darnold to put that drive together in overtime after Matthew Stafford probably wrapped up MVP and even in a loss, he was unbelievable.
Some of the balls he threw on that final drive.
Oh my goodness, just unbelievable. And then Sam comes right back. And then the whole narrative of that, if that game ends 30-14, the whole narrative that night would have been, see, Sam Darnold can't do it. He's just not that guy. He ain't it. He comes up short in every big game because remember, he threw a couple bad interceptions. But Sam to rebound like he did on that last drive, the pass in Jigba on the sideline, the pass in Jigba for the touchdown, hitting Saubert, which I thought was just a really well-conceived play. Heck of a win for the Seahawks. And now, me and Andrew, you've talked about this for weeks now. We want to see these teams play 3 times. And now even more than ever, I want to see the rubber match in the NFC Championship game because these two teams are the best two teams in football.
I agree. And likely it'll be in Seattle. And when they got home, Sean McVay did something he had never done, and that is an assistant coach in season. He's rearranged some of the deck chairs on his coaching staff tactfully before during the regular season, but he actually fired an assistant coach. He fired Chase Blackburn, did that when they got home late Friday afternoon. Chase Blackburn, the special teams coach, fired because they had talked all week, don't kick to Rashid Shaheed. Don't kick to Rashid Shaheed. They kicked to him. He ran it back. That turned the tide. If you don't kick it to him, if you kick it out of bounds, you probably kill 3 extra minutes. Maybe you stop them. Maybe you don't. Maybe you force a 3-and-out. Maybe you score. But either way, that turned tide right then and there. And Sean made the move when they got back. When we get back, we have news out of Kansas City because something is now out of Kansas City. And who's the MVP? We'll dip our toe in that pool as well. On Inside Coverage. It's Inside Coverage here on Yahoo. There is news other than on the field. There was significant off-the-field news on Monday, and that is Kansas City made an announcement in Kansas, not in Missouri. They made an announcement to work with the state of Kansas to build a new domed stadium to move out of Arrowhead with the potential opening of said new stadium in 2031. Also, included in that includes $1.8 billion of public funding, a new day-to-day practice facility in the state of Kansas. Arrowhead is one of the greatest buildings, not only in the NFL, but in American sports. It truly is that cool and that cold as well, sometimes this time of the year, and that loud, certainly. Always, especially with Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Andy Reid and this amazing run of success that they have had since 2017 when Patrick Mahomes was drafted, 2018 when he finally took over full time. However, for the fans in Missouri, they already lost the Cardinals. The Cardinals and then the Rams, obviously, other side of the state, but you're losing another team. Now, they're really not going anywhere. It's a short drive, but they're out of the state of Missouri. Chiefs fans deserve a world-class facility. That is what they are going to get. But C. Rob, where do you come down on this going across state lines?
I mean, listen, anytime a body of government comes and says, hey, we'll pay 70% of your stadium cost and the infrastructure around the stadium, which is roads, it's all kinds of things that you have to build to make that stadium possible. When a government comes and says, we'll pay for 70% of that stadium and everything around it, you do it. I mean, there's no question. If that's where you have to go to get that, I mean, and you're an NFL team. Do I agree with it? Do I agree with taxpayers, you know, funding this? I mean, look, that's a whole other debate. To me, what I don't like about this is hearing that it's going to be a dome, because I realize what we're moving toward 30 years from now, 40 years from now, we're not going to have an open air stadium in the NFL other than maybe Green Bay. Like, I think that every team
Buffalo's outside.
Yeah, that's true. Buffalo's is. That's a good catch on your part. I think that you have all these teams, and when they get a new stadium built, and if they're putting any of their own funds in, they're sitting there saying, I have to have access to that for events 365 days a year.
Yeah.
So all those cold months, once we get past February, I have to be able to have concerts there. I have to be able to have the, you know, monster trucks. I have to, it's just, I hate the fact that I know decades from now,
we're going to see Sunday.
It feels like we're going to, other than warm, you know, warm weather cities, right? I mean, I have to presume, you know, Miami, I have to presume, you know, most of the warm weather cities are going to still consider, right? But even then, the humidity, I mean, I live in Houston. They're not going to have it. Like, no way. Are you kidding me? Like, it'd be crazy. It's 1,000 degrees. We still have to have this thing closed to pump into AC.
You want to go cover Texans training camp? No, actually, I don't. I'm good.
Never.
No, I'm good.
I live here, and I'm like, I do not need to go out there. I'm like, I don't. 1,000 degrees outside. Forget that.
Yeah. For me, Charles, it's twofold. It's not just, yes, the dome stadium stinks. I hate this because all of us, we're of an age where we grew up and bad weather games are part of the NFL. We're supposed to tune in and see a blizzard every once in a while. We're supposed to tune in and it's 4 degrees below zero. And let's see how teams deal with the elements. And we're losing that in the NFL. I don't like that at all. I just think it's part of the fabric of the game that we're missing. And the second part of that, though, is we're losing Arrowhead Stadium. Like Andrew talked about. Other than Lambeau Field is on a tier of itself. Arrowhead might be number two. It might lead that second tier of best venues in the NFL. If you go hours before the game, they're tailgating out there. It is one of the greatest scenes in the NFL. The building itself is awesome. It's loud when they do the national anthem and the home of the Chiefs thing at the end. Everything about it is cool, and it's not going to be the same in a dome stadium. I don't care if they're playing in Kansas. Look, 49ers don't play anywhere close to San Francisco. The Washington Commanders don't play in Washington, although they're moving back there. Like, it doesn't matter. The fans are still going to go, and it'll be fine. That doesn't worry me, but losing Arrowhead Stadium, one of the jewels of all sports, one of the best sporting venues I've ever been to have a dome, oh, I just hate that. I hate that so much, but that's a sign of the times. It's unavoidable, and this is where we're going in the NFL. We're just going to lose these great outdoor venues time after time after time.
Do you not like any indoor venue? Like Dallas?
Maybe? Oh, I love it. Dallas is awesome. SoFi Stadium's one of the best. But these are, again, when we move from, when the Bears want to move into a dome, I'm like, come on. Like, part of the charm of the NFC North and that football that I grew up watching, being a Wisconsinite, was, hey, I'm going to tune in and they're going to try to play through the snow today. Or that great Halloween game in 1994
when Brett Favre was running through the rain. Field last week.
I know, it's miserable. I get it from a fan's aspect. It could be miserable. I get that. So I sit here watching it on TV like, wow, that looks really cool when somebody's freezing.
I'm really comfortable in my Buffalo Wild Wings. Give me another beer.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. Like, but doesn't it, we're losing some of the charm of the NFL. Football is supposed to be played in the elements. It is not baseball where you get rained out, you know?
And don't you guys, I mean, especially when we get into December and January, if I have all the games up, or if I'm sitting there and let's say we're watching a Red Zone channel or whatever, and there's a split screen, the second I see snow on a field, I'm drawn to that game. Instantaneously, as a viewer, I'm like, oh my gosh, look at this. And I will tune into that right away just because of, I think, what it evokes when you're watching it. You're like, especially if you've played football and you've played in that. I mean, I grew up in Michigan, played in that crap, right? You played in high school, played in the snow, freezing. And, you know, with my mom sneaking me hot chocolate on the sidelines because I'm dying. You know, it's just, I think from a viewer experience, we're going to get to the point where far fewer of those exist. I think it'll affect quarterback numbers because you're going to have more quarterbacks playing most of their games in domes. I think it does. It has a trickle down effect that, you know, over the expanse of decades will change what the NFL is.
I agree. The flip side of that is you can count on one hand, sometimes on three fingers, sometimes on one finger, the number of times And I'm with you. Those snow games are awesome. Brown Steelers last year, the snow globe Thursday night in Cleveland. Awesome. Most fun I've had in a long, 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 long time. Browns won, also beat the Steelers. It was glorious. Are you kidding me? But those rarely happen. Like, you get one or two a year. We had one 2 weeks ago in Buffalo. It might be the only one of the year. You never know. We got a couple of weeks left. The cold in Chicago 2 weeks ago, it was just cold. It wasn't snow. It was bitter and miserable.
Dolphins Chiefs.
But
Dolphins Chiefs a couple years ago. Patrick Mahomes' helmet exploded. Like, you don't get that. Like, I will never see that again.
Also in that game, fans lost digits. Like, there were frostbite victims taken to the hospital that afternoon. We're running late. Let's move on here. But I think we're kind of sort of all on the same page. This is all the way 2031 until it finally happens. Hey, C-Rob, MVP front runners, what do you got here? A couple of minutes. Talk to me.
Yeah, I got as Frank tries to disparage me whenever he brings it up, I do have a vote for MVP. So I have to be careful here.
I just want to criticize you for it. That's all.
That's what. All right. I'll take it. It's worth it for the vote. I want to pose this question to you because I think it's interesting every year. And, you know, you get asked, you'll have people ask you what your criteria is for the MVP. What does it mean? And, you know, there's no clear, the Associated Press doesn't say to you, here is what the absolute criteria is for the MVP. So it's very much it's an interesting exercise, I think, from one voter to the next to kind of understand how they view it. I want to ask you this. This year, I think one of the debates that's going to happen, because it feels like Matthew Stafford is the leader in the clubhouse, right? 40 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. Mm-hmm. You know, the advanced analytics look great. He's got 112 QB rating. I mean, he's been flawless in terms of his career seasons. This, I think, will be it. What weight would you give? Because of Drake May, there's going to be a Drake May crowd. There'll be like a Josh Allen crowd. There'll be a Trevor Lawrence crowd. When you look at Drake May and you look at Matthew Stafford, and I'm asking you to this, how much weight do you give to the surrounding pieces? To who Matthew Stafford's throwing to, who's on his offensive line, who's in the backfield. And in some respects, Matthew Stafford has a head coach who's offensive minded, constantly building and scheming things for him. They go and they get Devontae Adams, Puka Nacua, there's, you know, whatever. You can talk about all that. Then you look at Drake May, defensive coach, right? Now, Josh McDaniels might as well be considered an offensive head coach, right? He's going to be there forever. He's one of the brilliant minds in terms of an OC. But the surrounding pieces that Drake May has had to work with are certainly more challenging than the ones and less experienced in some respects, other than Stephon Diggs, obviously, that Matthew Stafford's been working with. I'm curious, how would you guys weight that in terms of the surrounding pieces and who's raising the level of play around them versus who is using the quality of players around them to maximize their own success?
It's a difficult question. It's a difficult needle to thread. Frank, you go first.
I'll be very blunt about it. Not at all. Not even a little bit. I hated last year when the entire MVP debate became whose teammates are worse. That is not how MVP should be decided. You guys, the voters, and I've talked to you about this, you cannot make Lamar Jackson the AP quarterback and vote somebody else MVP. It does not make sense in my mind, and it never will, and I will always debate that pick. Lamar Jackson should have been MVP last year. So when we start to get into, oh, well, this guy has worse teammates than this guy, that is not what MVP should be. I hate that. It is one of my pet peeves. Yes, Matthew Stafford has a better setup, but who's played better? Who's been the better player? And I'm fine with Josh Allen winning that because he's just every week I watch that guy on TV and I'm like, whoa, that is amazing what he's doing. I'm fine with Matthew Stafford. I'm actually fine with Drake May winning it too. But I don't think this should devolve into, well, whose teammates are worse? Because that's just, it's not Matthew Stafford's fault. And by the way, Matthew Stafford makes Puka Nacua awesome too. Like, he's part of that.
Sure. Yeah, it's the old, well, if you take him off the team, then what? Well, most of these teams aren't any good. Now, you could also argue that in L.A., you take Matthew Stafford off the team. Jimmy Garoppolo is still a very good quarterback, but he's not as good as Matthew Stafford. He isn't, and they wouldn't be the same team with Jimmy Garoppolo. They'd be a winning team. They'd be in the playoff conversation, but they wouldn't be this good. What Stafford has done is amazing. I also think that a lot of people take into account his career, and this isn't going to be a career achievement award. He's won a Super Bowl, but I certainly think people do that lens as well. And I think some people are going to look at Drake May and say, it's year two. It's year two. His time will come. The MVP is such a,
I hate that.
I don't want to call it a silly thing. It's a significant honor, but everybody brings bias. Is a very bias implies maliciousness, and I'm not suggesting that. But every voter brings their own criteria and bias to right. it. Do we agree with that?
Everyone definitely, I mean, as a voter, I can tell you everybody has their own criteria. There's no doubt. I mean, there was a debate yeah. last year, and I talked to other voters about this, about whether or not they were going to split their ballot. And I did not split my ballot. I voted for Josh Allen. I disagree with Frank. I think that Josh Allen was the MVP last year. I have my reasons for that. But I did not split my ballot. And I understand people who were not so happy that other voters split their ballot and had an all-pro in Lamar Jackson, first-team all-pro quarterback, and yet he was not their MVP. That's their explanation to make. It's not mine. But I will say it's a, always an interesting process every year, because you know that just because you're looking at it from one vantage, the other 49 voters could be looking at it from a completely unique vantage as well, and you're all coming to a different conclusion or the same conclusion using different roads. It's really interesting every year.
One quick thing. I'll keep this brief. A little bit of MVP trivia for you. If Matthew Stafford wins and they don't win the division, it's going to be a little bit of an outlier. A quarterback from a non-divisional winner has not won since 2008. It's the formula is it's a quarterback from a division winner. So if they don't win the NFC West, but Stafford wins MVP, it's going to be the first time that's happened since Manning in 2008. So I'm interested in that
too. Yeah, they're made up parameters, which is kind of my point. Not necessarily parameters. They're just historic. So appreciate that. All right. So I normally ask, we have time for one more thing before we go. I'm just going to ask aloud, Madison, do we have time for one more thing before we go? Okay. Frank, you go first.
You know, a guy who's become a punching bag for us who cover the NFL, and for good reason, is David Tepper, Carolina Panthers owner. And he brought a lot of this on himself, right? He was changing quarterbacks every year. He's changing coaches all the time. He's doing this with his soccer team, too. He was just a bad owner. I want to give David Tepper some credit. The Carolina Panthers, with two games to go, are first place of the NFC South. And I think a lot of that is because Tepper has learned from his mistakes, which Daniel Snyder never did, by the way, kept making the same mistakes over and over. I think David Tepper realized, I can't change everybody every year. I can't just get rid of Bryce Young and Dave Canales and Dan Morgan just because we had another losing season. I need to stay in the shadows. I don't need to be a loudmouth out there all the time. You've rarely heard from Tepper this year, a couple times, but nothing crazy. Just kind of, hey, we're doing great, blah, blah, blah. I'll give David Tepper some credit. We are so quick to criticize him. And again, good reasons, throwing drinks on fans and whatnot. I want to take a step back and say, David Tepper, you figured it out a little bit. Your team is in first place. And I think these two things are related. I think David Tepper being a better owner this year is a big reason the Panthers are having success.
What do you got, C-Rob?
So Thursday, Christmas Day, we're going to see the Kansas City Chiefs play. We're going to see the Detroit Lions play. They also played on Thanksgiving. And I think this is idiotic that the NFL is going to take two teams and have them play on both holidays. I have no idea when the schedule's being put together. I have no idea how someone didn't say, hey, let's at least split those two holidays up and not put the same two teams on the same two holidays. People do matter here. I know fans aren't going to care. They're going to say, look, you're a professional athlete. You get paid millions of dollars. You know, you could spend time with your family, you know, before or after the game. They could travel with you or whatever. I just don't like it. I think it's ridiculous that the NFL, A, is playing games on Christmas anyway, but B, the fact that you would ever take two teams and put them on both Christmas and Thanksgiving in the same year is just foolish to me.
And the Lions said the same thing. I gave up my Thanksgiving. I don't like that I have to give up my Christmas as well. I don't mind that there are games on Christmas, but I'm with you. I don't know that a team should be asked to work both of those major holidays. My one more thing is after the Bears, when we said 1,000 times, my money, it is best rivalry Bears-Packers in the NFL after that thrilling Bears victory late Saturday evening. Caleb Williams was out in the community on Sunday. Can we show you the hat he was wearing? This is the stocking stuffer for everyone in Chicago. He is wearing the cheese grater hat.
Man.
It's the same hat that DJ Moore was seen wearing in the locker room Saturday evening at Soldier Field, celebrating his game-winning touchdown. Thursday night was good. Saturday night was also amazing. One of the games of the year. Caleb and the Bears. What an ending. What an ending right around midnight or local in Chicago. And what an ending to the show today as well for Charles Robinson and for Frank Schwab. Remember, don't go into the stands and pull anyone by their blue wig and smack them. My name is Andrew Siciliano. Thanks for listening to and watching Inside Coverage on Yahoo.